Writer Elizabeth Gilbert hit the big time with her best-selling memoir, Eat, Pray, Love. After a roller coaster of a publicity ride and seeing herself played on screen by Julia Roberts, she went back to her first love, fiction. She wrote a big, fat, 500-page novel, which has just come out in paperback, called The Signature of All Things. Set in the 19th century, it's full of science, astronomers, sea captains, abolitionists, and a blue-stocking botanist.
Alma Whitaker is my heroine. She is a botanist, or as lady botanists were called in that day, a polite botanist. her father was a great man of botany. Her mother was an overeducated Dutch intellectual. And she comes into her own, into the world of science. And I did an enormous amount of research for this book on 19th century botanical exploration, and particularly on the women in that field, and was delighted to find that there were many of them, because botany was really the only science that women were a bit welcomed into, on account of the fact that it was associated with domesticity in a way, because women have always been associated with plants and flowers. And once they snuck into it through the garden gate, they made amazing scientific contributions. And so it was a really lovely way for me to honor the lives of some of those very extraordinary early female scientists.
Were there particular early female scientists who inspired this character?
There were several. She's not based on any one person in particular, but I mean, we can sort of go through time. Her early days, I drew a great deal on the life of Beatrix Potter, who we know from Peter Rabbit fame, but who is a really avid amateur naturalist.
And home dissecting, too. Don't I remember that's something Beatrix Potter did? You think of her as this sweet woman who wrote the charming stories about little animals. Actually, she dissected a lot of those little animals, too.
Yeah, before she was Peter Rabbit's mother, she was a great taxidermist. but there were so many like her. And then, I mean, one of the ones who I really love is in my own home state of New Jersey, there was a woman named Mrs. Mary Treat who studied carnivorous swamp plants. And she was a correspondent with Charles Darwin. And that was one of the really key things for me to discover, were the letters between Darwin and Mrs. Mary Treat, because they were peer-to-peer scientific letters. You know, initially I had intended to write a novel about a woman of towering intellect whose talents are not taken seriously because she's a woman. But then I discovered, actually, there were quite a number of them who were taken very seriously. Darwin was writing to her for advice and questions, and she was correcting him when his science was wrong. And they seemed to regard each other as equals. And that's the tone with which I wanted to write this book.
Well, going back to the Alma's obsession with plants and eventually with mosses, I was going to ask if you would read us a little bit from the book, because who would think moss could be interesting?
So, yes, my character spends her life studying moss, and we can go more into reasons of that, but hopefully this will a bit explain her fascination. This is the part where she's discovering their wonders and marvels. In every way, mosses could seem plain, dull, modest, even primitive. The simplest weed sprouting from the humblest city sidewalk appeared infinitely more sophisticated by comparison. But here is what few people understood, and what Alma came to learn. Moss is inconceivably strong. Moss eats stone, and scarcely anything in return eats moss. Moss dines upon boulders, slowly but devastatingly, in a meal that lasts for centuries. Given enough time, a colony of moss can turn a cliff into gravel and turn that gravel into topsoil. Under shelves of exposed limestone, moss colonies create dipping, living sponges that hold on tight and drink calciferous water straight from the stone. Over time, this mix of moss and mineral will turn itself into travertine marble. Within that hard, creamy marble surface, one will forever see veins of blue, green, and gray, stained with the bodies of ancient moss colonies.
I had no idea that moss could be so beautiful, so fascinating, and so ancient. Did that surprise you?
It did, and you know, you don't get to be the oldest plant on earth by being stupid and boring, you know? Actually, you know, what I'm seeing now is a lot of people who are realizing, oh, let's cultivate it. Let's pour some buttermilk and yogurt on it and make it grow more, because it's so exquisite.
Does that work?
It does. Or beer. You can just pour almost practically battery acid. I mean, anything you can do to make it as acidic as you can. They do love it. And once you begin to regard it as what it is, which is a rainforest in miniature, it's kind of hard to get rid of it once you know how glorious it is.
You grew up on a Christmas tree farm, I think.
I did. I'm an elf.
Is that where you developed a love of botany?
Well, as a child, that's where I developed a hate of botany, actually, because, and my mother was also a passionate farmer, and we spent a lot of our childhoods, my sister and I, out working outside, which I think very few children love, and I didn't love, but returned to it in adulthood, and now have become a passionate gardener myself, which is also what led me into wanting to write this book.
Love shows up in the person of Ambrose Pike, who is a follower of a fairly obscure, I think, 16th century writer, Jacob Bohm.
Sure. Well, Jacob Bohm is the author of this thesis called The Signature of All Things. It's also known in the scientific world as the Doctrine of Signatures. And he was a true life character and an amazing one. There is not really a type that you could call, you know, the typical 16th century cobbler, mystic, botanist, prophet, but that's who he was. And he wrote this theory surmising that God so loved humankind that the Lord had hidden in the design of every plant some sort of clue in its design as to its usage for us. So the simplest example would be to say that walnuts are very good for headaches, and if you crack open a walnut, you'll see that it looks exactly like the human brain. Mm. And that's God's clue that if you have a headache, you should eat that. And that sage leaves are very good for liver ailments, and they are shaped exactly like the human liver, as are almost every other leaf on earth, by the way. But anyway,
you know, this could be a dangerous doctrine.
Yes, it's a dangerous doctrine, but it's a very idealistic doctrine. And it's also, I found, a very moving one because it sort of signals the beginning of an attempt at what we would now call taxonomy. You know, for all his kind of madness and dreaminess, what Jacob Bohm was really trying to do was sort of sort out plants by their shape and by their usage. You know, it's kind of that intersection between medieval superstition and modern science. And by the time my characters come along, he had been much discredited, but Ambrose Pike still believes in it and is still sort of looking for the signature of all things in the plant world. And in fact, I feel like every single character in my novel in some way or another, because they're all involved in botany, that they're all trying to break the code of the signature of all things. And in fact, that's what all of science is, and indeed what all of religion is, and hopefully what all of art is that we're all just trying to kind of crack the code on the meaning of life.
Well, that's interesting, because I was going to ask you, you know, reviewers have been talking a lot about how remarkable it seems that you would go back to fiction after you had written these hugely successful memoirs, Eat, Pray, Love, and then Committed. But I was thinking that, you know, in many ways, you're writing about very similar experiences, because Alma has her own Eat, Pray, Love experience when things break down and her love does not go well and she takes off, much as you did. I mean, I assume that was deliberate.
You know, it wasn't, it's weird. It was more, I love my 19th century literature, but I am troubled by the fact that the female characters in those books really only ever get one of two endings, right? You either have a happy ending, which means that you're married well, and that you're married to landed gentry, or you have a terribly tragic ending, usually because you made a sensual error and you are a suicide, a murder, or, you know, under the wheels of the train. So you're either, you know, Lizzie Bennet or you're Anna Karenina. and there's right. not a lot in between. And I feel like, you know, then as now, that's not really what women's lives are. You know, I object to the idea that a woman's life is either, you know, she's either rescued or ruined by a man. And I feel like the great crowning superhero achievement of womanhood is the ability to be resilient. And that's something that is just not celebrated enough in fiction. And I wanted to write about a woman who reminds me of myself and just mm-hmm. about every woman I love and admire, which is to say that somebody who doesn't necessarily get every single thing she wants, but who gets what she does not expect and who finds unknown strengths in that, and ultimately who is defined by the work that she loves. So the romantic story in this book, the real love story in this book, is between Alma and her vocation. And I feel like that's something that is not celebrated enough in women's stories, and something that I know intimately.
Elizabeth Gilbert is the author of the memoir Eat, Pray, Love. Her novel, The Signature of All Things, is just out in paper. And speaking of science and art, this is music by Mylise, an artist who works with sound generated by plants.